I'm Scott Linger. I'm also with Web Services at Duke Law. And so I'm just going to kind of pick up on that and talk about just sort of how the social web's kind of changing the way people use it and why we need to take advantage of that. And then also just some ways we should look at that from a law school website perspective. So this is just a quote from Tim Berners-Lee in 1989, just kind of talking about how he sort of envisioned the web as being this social interaction. And like Nick was saying with GeoCities, when the web initially was being built, it was more of a static sort of fixed content, and there weren't a lot of content providers. And as it's become more of a common thread in our society, that more and more people are becoming not just receivers and viewers of that content, but also providing and interacting with that. And so we're basically making the argument that that's important for us to recognize when we, in developing and, keeping our websites up to date. It's just a brief description, generally for people that are viewing this later. So, the four common practices of the social web. The individual is a contributor of content. So like I said before, this is, Wikipedia, which gives you the ability to log in and, add an article or update or delete or remove forums, blogs, where you can have your own blog, or you can, provide feedback or comment on a post that someone's already created. And that's something that, people are just flocking to. And it's also a great way, to add content to your site and, have visitors coming back because, they're getting involved, and it's not just up to someone in your web services department or a staff person or assistant to, be given documents to update, but you can actually open that up so that it's updated by your users. So here's an example of the Chicago Law faculty blog. And so rather than just depending on, their faculty to have a, article published in some, type of journal or newspaper, whatever, they've also created a blog which lets, anyone in the world really just come in and comment on what's sort of going on at the university. What they've done nicely that I like is they've sort of integrated all the faculty together in one blog. So, if you don't have the time to publish, more than once every 2 months, you're not stuck with, 20 or 30 individual blogs with barely anything on them, but you've got, a lot more happening, so it's more up to date. And then, secondly, you've got interaction with content. So, kind of going off with the first, it's not just that you have information you put up that's there to view, but people can go in and interact with that. Like the biggest one, I think, is tagging. So, like, have you ever considered instead of just having a sitemap for your site where it's linear and schematic, but also having some type of tagging or folksonomy where, the users can determine what they think is important and where they classify things. And, it could be a useful alternative for people to find the information they're looking for. It could also be a great way for you to kind of determine what people are really using and what areas of your site are, getting heavier traffic and more use from your visitors. And here is just a screenshot of Newsvine, and what they've done is they'll take just articles that published online, like New York Times, Washington Post, wherever, and pull it into their system and then allow commenting and chatting and feedback on an article. So, if you're, on your homepage linking to different news events from, people at your school that are in the news, what if you link to the Newsvine, thread of that so that, people coming to your site can not just read it, but can interact with it. Thirdly, content separate from location. So like this is kind of what Nick was presenting, RSS feeds, APIs, so what you're creating isn't necessarily bound to your site. And to take that one step further, it's important, for communications departments and things like that to understand that though they may be, fashioning, these new events or happenings or alumni and curriculum information, people may be taking that from your website and posting it somewhere else, you know, without you even knowing about it. So that's something really important to consider, you know, is how, you know, might this content be used outside of your control, outside of your site. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, some enterprising young student develops some sort of application that takes, you know, different curriculum or, you know, whatever, and develops a system where instead of going to different law schools to check things, they go to somewhere else. So you're represented, you know, not from your own site, but through, you know, a product someone else has created. And lastly, and so this is sort of an example of that, and this is incredible. This is Library Thing. Maybe they'll change the name at some point, but right now it's just in beta, and what it is sort of the response, if Flickr is what you go to post your photos and have those interacted with, this is what you'd use to create a book list. So users can come in and, you know, post like 100 or 200 books that they enjoy, they're currently reading or whatever, but then it pulls from Amazon and takes reviews and headings and the ISBN number, and then it also lets users through the Library Thing system tag different books with different topics, merge them with different authors, give reviews. So it just sort of takes, you know, a static fixed book and just adds this wealth of information that just different people can add to it. And then you can take these lists and like feed it to your own blog or your own website. So like right here we have Bound by Law, which was the comic that Professor Boyle had yesterday. And you can see that there's already people that are, you know, posting that as one of the books they own, and then it's, you know, listed under these sort of different tags, so public domain, graphic novel, intellectual property. So it really opens up, you know, the classification that you might be able to find this under and group it with. So that could be something powerful, maybe something to integrate with your, you know, library homepage or, you know, faculty, publications, books, things like that. And lastly, integration of content. So the idea that, you know, you're taking content from elsewhere and incorporating that into your own site, be it wikis, feeds, APIs. And so this is a combination of a wiki and the Google Map API on Case Western University. And as you can see, they've just taken, you know, Google Map and of their university, and then they've put a wiki in with that where you can, you know, put a mark on a location, and then users can come in and like define what's at that location. So it's sort of a really dynamic kind of map, and I'm not sure how their wiki's controlled, but like you could envision, you know, allowing your students, if they're, you know, logged in under your network, to be able to go in and, you know, say places outside of the school where it's, you know, good to get pizza or meet with groups to study, or, you know, places to bike to, what have you. So, and, you know, the map's already there. You don't have to do anything to build it. You just have to import that into your site. Wiki's already been developed. You don't have to spend any time building that application. You just integrate it. And then you don't even have to really spend a lot of time making content, because you can open that up to students and users of the university to, you know, put the content that they feel is important in there. So it's really a way to cut down time and make things more usable for your audience. So now we're going to go to part two, which is how to integrate some of these things in ways that would be appropriate for law school and university websites. So one question you have to ask is the audience. You know, is this going to be something on your intranet? Is it going to be external? Are you going to require authentication, so they have to log in? Secondly, moderation. Is it going to be user moderated? So will people just kind of moderate each other? So an example of that is like, you know, tagging with Amazon. So you tag a book about public domain law as, you know, automotive maintenance, you know, completely wrong. But if you're the only person that's tagged it with that, then it's not really going to get, you know, a lot of hits or visits with that because it's just not practical. Whereas the people that are, you know, naming it more appropriately and it's, you know, built in with other forms of literature that are similar, those are really going to get links. So even though it happened, it's not really a problem. Or you could do the Wikipedia version, which was just in the New York Times this morning, where, you know, they've been getting a lot of press for just having their system completely open and anyone could go in, and they had some problems with, you know, people going to, you know, the President George Bush content and deleting it or posting inappropriate photos or whatever. And so they've just kind of identified like under 100 pages within their massive site that they, you know, require login or authentication to update. So they're kind of monitoring those, but the rest is open. And so so that principle is just that, you know, leave it open and see what happens. And, you know, it's a great way to see how the popularity is going to be, whereas if you're requiring login, you know, that in itself could be a deterrent for people to even use the application. So if you leave it open and, you know, things become a problem, you know, maybe just deal with it then. And, you know, it's, you know, pull it down if you need to, or just build an up, you know, sort of requirement to log in or whatever, you know, when it becomes necessary. But I think by, you know, this fear that, you know, if we leave it open, who knows, you know, what they're going to do, and, you know, we need to protect our university's image and things like that, I'm not sure that that's necessary right off the bat. I mean, it's your call, but I think by leaving things open, you're going to have a more rich experience. Developing critical mass, I think, is key to effective social internet. So, you know, you can make a blog, but if, you know, you're getting one person commenting and it's the same person every day, it's not that social. So how do you go about driving people to this thing? I think one of the laziest ways to do it is to just use some external applications that are already generating traffic, like the Newsvine we looked at earlier, where they were taking articles and allowing people to comment. You know, instead of making a commenting system on your own for your own site, for people to comment, just use, you know, Newsvine and pull it into your site and list the article, and then people can see responses outside of your school, but, you know, people within your organization will be able to comment as well. So that's, I think that's a really great way to develop critical mass, and you don't have to focus, like, you know, mass emails to people and promoting it with little buttons on your homepage and whatnot. It just, you know, is because it's kind of already popular. And also with that, then you've got traffic from those groups, like Newsvine traffic, coming to your site. So it's kind of a two-way benefit. Provide value. And so this is, you know, making it easy to use. You know, if it's something buried in your site, give it an easy-to-remember URL. Make the interface easy to use. So if you've got, you know, a wiki, don't have a, you know, really difficult, you know, way to generate content, but, you know, button click, put in information, hit enter, there it is. And that, you know, in and of itself can make or break your application or, you know, the use of your social content. And lastly, choosing the right tools. So the mapping battle, that's, you know, Microsoft's mapping system, Yahoo, MapQuest, and then, of course, Google Maps. And which do you use? Do you use any of those? Keep in mind, you know, how those organizations may be offering that content in the future. So really read the terms closely, and maybe even try to see, you know, if there's discussion elsewhere on, you know, whether one day, you know, MapQuest decides to start charging for, you know, so much bandwidth. So if one day your map is just heavily used and it exceeds this bandwidth, you know, you're all of a sudden going to have to start paying for this service that you once thought was free, and then you have to look at something else. So when you're looking at, you know, integrating different applications, you know, look and see, you know, just try to think, you know, is this going to be a long-term solution, or what would be, is this going to be able to be adjusted easily? Yes, question.
If you do, if that does happen, like using MapQuest, and then say you have to switch to Google Maps or some other software that's using Map, is the transition easy to do? I mean, do you have to do a link, a transitional link? Or?
Well, that's kind of the just the nature that the question is, you know, do you have to, you know, is it going to be easy, going to be hard? And that's what you're going to kind of have to determine when you're setting it up. So, and it just depends, you know, on the application. You know, so how much, you know, on your end, you're sort of configuring your content to work with this will really determine how easy it would be to switch. You know, or maybe, you know, the service is so good that it's just easier to pay $100 a month, you know, than have someone give, you know, 10 hours a week to updating this thing. So, I mean, that's a consideration too. And so then I'm going to just show some brief examples of some schools and other places that are sort of using some of this technology now. And it really, I think university websites have kind of been the slowest to really integrate social content. I mean, if you look at most schools, it's still, you know, you go to each page and it's content that, you know, someone has emailed their web updater and they've posted this content. And, you know, it's there until someone else says, okay, here's an email, update this with, you know, this item. And that's really all it is. And there's very little interaction, and there's... So we're saying that if the students and the people coming into your schools in the next 5 to 10 years that Nick talked about, you know, are used to this rich experience, then we need to be ready, you know, with a system, you know, that's going to, you know, be able to provide that rich experience to them for, you know, a richer learning environment. So this is sort of a online aggregator of news feeds that Suffolk University Law School's done. So they're taking feeds from Jurist and Law.com and elsewhere and posting them on their site. So rather than you going in and saying, you know, all this new stuff happened in, you know, this area of law, you know, they just gather feeds. So no one really has to do any updating at all. It just refreshes on its own. On the flip side, this is UVA, and these are all the different feeds that they offer from their site. You can see there's just gajillions of them, but they're organized by topic and category, so you know, if someone wants to use a particular type of content, like say you've got an external blog that you just personally do on criminal law, then you can just take UVA's criminal law feed and you don't have to do anything on your end to, you know, strip out content you don't want. It's all, you know, specifically for criminal law. So they're making their content really easy for other people to use. So if you're offering RSS on your site, is it in a way that other people could integrate it well? And is it a way that they could, you know, use it effectively? Next are blogs. And these are starting to become more popular. I think these are like what we saw with Chicago. You know, they're easy to add, but they give a lot of value. So this is Case School of Law's Saddam Hussein trial blog, which is just loaded with information, but in the center, you know, you see the blog with the commenting and track back and, you know, typical blog. And again, this is Duke Law's Law and Technology Review blog. And what they've done, this is a student-run blog, and what they've done to kind of generate traffic is just, you know, try to start out with, you know, when they launched, they had quite a few articles up and ready to go. So it wasn't as if, you know, you're going to this, you know, new blog and there's, you know, two articles by, you know, someone you've never heard of, but these, you know, they started with prominent, well-known scholars in the field and, you know, and several articles on that so that, you know, there's already something for people to, you know, work with. And then wikis. So this is the Berkman Center wiki, and they've got a number of different sort of topics there on the left under navigation. And this, up until a couple weeks ago, was wide open. Anyone could come in, update what they wanted to. And then for whatever reason, they decided that that wasn't working well. There were problems with it. So now I believe you either need to be, you know, connected in the school, or you can request a wiki account and they'll build an account for you, but you can't just randomly come in and do what you want with their content. So, you know, they sort of did the Wikipedia thing and opened it up at the beginning, and, you know, if things turned ugly, then, you know, close it down for a little while and, you know, see what effect that has on, you know, your users and your content. And lastly, the API integration, and we already looked at this, but it's just such a good example. I thought I'd use it again because it's, you know, it's not just one, you know, service, but they're integrating the wiki and the API, and, you know, it works without, you know, aside from setting it up, it works without, you know, anyone doing anything to it. And so, lastly, I'm going to end with some other areas to be considered. Like Nick brought up, the implication of MySpace. I know the Library of Congress now has a MySpace page just to try to, you know, be available to people that are on MySpace 23 hours a day. And I don't know if that's appropriate for, you know, law schools or universities to be setting up MySpace pages, but if you think of MySpace sort of as, you know, the internet version of the Yellow Pages, you know, maybe it is appropriate, and maybe you just have, you know, a couple news things and a link to your site, but, you know, it's a great way to get, you know, your school in a, you know, area where, you know, it may not be represented. Second, how to consistently present content outside of your website. So if you're offering RSS, it's not going to come with any branding. So you can't have your logo or things like that. It's generally going to be fed strictly as text. So, you know, maybe your communications department needs to come up with some type of system where, you know, certain language is used to identify the university, or you know, there's something in the text itself that, you know, people can read it and go, oh, this must be from, you know, Dubois. Tagging in Folksonomy. And this is, you know, just an alternative to your, you know, site navigation, but also, you know, using this as a way for, you know, non-traditional methods of searching to be effective. So, you know, a lot of schools have the search bar. Well, you know, think of tagging Folksonomy as a shortcut in your search bar where someone else has already searched and come up with these links that you might find interesting under this topic. Commenting apart from blogging. So this is the idea, sort of like Newsvine did, where, you know, you don't just need to have a blog in order for people to give feedback on content. So just think of other areas in your site that, you know, people may want to interact with, but you're not necessarily going to haul off and throw a blog in. And the growth of APIs, and what to do if, when they start charging or requiring advertising or other restrictions on the use of their content. And I kind of already talked about some of those issues, but definitely need to, you know, consider the down the road scenario a lot if you're going to be implementing that type of content. And then just lastly, just some brief resources. We may add to this on the Cali blog, but this is just kind of a real basic. If you're looking for blogging, in particular, WordPress, we used it for the Duke blog, and it's real terrific, really easy to install, simple to build your own kind of template, and the documentation and the support for it is just immense. So, you know, I've never run into something that I couldn't find an answer to. That was really useful. The Lego people were provided by Dune Chaser on Flickr, and he's also got a collection of like techie people. Like, if you look, the guy there in the tie is Steve Wozniak, and right there is Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. There are music fans out there. And like I said, this is Nick Drury and myself, Scott Linger, and it's our contact information. And now we'll take any questions that you might have. Yeah?
I love this stuff. I think that with librarians and some faculty, there's a feeling that if we adopt or embrace these communities, especially Folksonomies, we're going to lose what brings us value. An example would be your library catalog. We're using an innovative innovation library. I believe the University of Pennsylvania has allowed tagging within their library catalog. And so their library catalog users are creating their own faultonomy. And for me, it's about time. Because if you're trying to search for things by subject or by relevance, it's very difficult, you know, unless you have that known good item, and then you can build from there. And so what they're doing is they're sort of building this parallel descriptive universe to get to all this data. But that's what we do. I mean, that's the universe that we build, and it gives us value. So I think that there's some resistance, and I'm not sure how we overcome that, you know, by sort of unlocking all the doors that we have once everybody comes in. And then, I think it's good. Mm-hmm. It's all good, actually. But I'm wondering about if there's sort of inherent conflicts between that sort of proprietary intellectual content that we deliver and the ability of a user to bypass all of that and create their own system.
Yeah, and with that, sort of the problem where, you know, more appropriately, you know, these type of materials are really considered this, you know, and if you're searching for, you know, something, but, you know, removing it from, you know, what its official category is, then you're kind of changing, you know, how the content's even understood. But, you know, that's kind of what the social web is, you know, and, you know, so, I mean, and I think, you know, I wouldn't have one, I'd have both. I wouldn't just, you know, throw out the card catalog and, you know, just start tagging, because that's not going to happen. But on the other hand, you know, if someone's searching, you know, through something and, you know, they find a book that might be good, but, and it's got a tag on it, they can click the tag and see, you know, other people that have used that book, you know, what other books have been helpful for them in their field of study. So, you know, I think they sort of, you know, help each other out, and it's not that, you know, one or the other by themselves is better, but that, you know, it's the combination of them. And I think also with the social web, as these start to become more popular and, you know, more students go through the school and have been able to tag things, then, you know, you're going to have a richer experience with tagging as well. And also it might be useful to consider like the library thing that we looked at earlier, which already does tagging, and it's done by those, you know, outside of your school. So it's, you know, opening up the community to more users, so it's going to build up, you know, a tagging system a lot quicker. So maybe taking advantage of things like that might be a, you know, an alternative to more healthy, you know, tagging system. Yeah?
I liked your example with the Google map with Case. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, would you recommend going with, like, a wrapper service where you could just create a group and then people could join the group and, you know, do things with your map, or do you need to go with a Google type map solution and use their API and figure out a way to do it yourself? Or is there an easy way to use Google Maps?
So you're kind of saying even being lazier and just using Frapper?
Yeah,
to do
all that. Would that be, would you recommend, are there other advantages to going in with the Google API?
I think, and Nick may want to add to this, but I think just with, I mean, going with Google, like you saw with Case, they kind of keep it in their site, which, you know, is good for the marketing or communications department, but bad for, you know, users, because they have to go through your site to get there. Whereas if it's in Frapper, you know, you've opened up that content to the Frapper community. So, you know, maybe it is, you know, you just put a link and say, you know, here's a map of our school and things you might find of interest in.
It really depends if you want to go beyond what Frapper offer.
Yeah, I'm not too deep into what they do. I have joined a few groups, but mostly it's just so people know, like it's a podcast, so you see people across the country are listening to this podcast, but that's as far as I know, that as far as the services that they offer.
Yeah. The advantage of using an API is that you have the control over the things that happen and the particular services that you can put together. There's no reason why you can't use one API here and another here and integrate those with each other so you can extend it. That'd be a big thing, control.
Yeah.
I think responding to the question that came over here, I don't know if it's so much a conflict as just the definitions too. I mean, you use the term social web, and I think there's the social web and there's the sort of the academic enterprise, and a lot of what's happening now with this social web and blogging and all that, a lot of what's been discussed at this conference, it's sort of like the natural extension of a more micro level of within law school study groups years ago, and now students are able to expand that. So if you were in a course, say, like Admiralty, or a course that isn't offered in a lot of places, you could set up a blog, bring in people that are from that, you know, from other schools and exchange ideas, discuss cases, and so it's sort of expanding that horizon. But the other aspects, like, you know, publishing, somebody mentioned it from programs yesterday about at the ALS meeting about tenure track faculty not, you know, considering publishing blogs, or, you know, blogs are being frowned upon. It's, you can't use that as a, you know, I know my institution, they're not going to do something I write unless it's in there. So I think it's not a conflict as much as it is as a divergence and convergence at the same time. It's different ways of using material.
Yeah, and in some cases, it is important to separate out the source. So, you know, in the tagging example, it's probably fairly clearly delineated that this is, you know, users and any user. So it's really important not to lose the sort of...
And like you said, with respect to what purposes, what are you in designing, which is the user you're trying to get to?
If I can comment real quick on the faculty logging issue, I mean, it kind of reminds me of when I was an undergrad, and I was told that, you know, you can't put any, you know, information you find on the web and cite it in your paper because, you know, you don't know who's made it, and, you know, it could be someone unqualified, and so that's not considered appropriate to hand in. And I really don't think that'd be, you know, the case anymore. I hope not. And it's really just a matter, you know, sure, some random person could go in and, you know, make a, you know, lob log, and it could be all entirely wrong. But, you know, if you look at that and you know, you cite this and your citation is, you know, full of information that's wrong, well then, you're going to learn that that's wrong. And it's more the social aspect of people, you know, reviewing these types of things that sort of pulls out, you know, what is useful and what is helpful. And so I think the blog is kind of just the next thing from, you know, the internet itself where, you know, oh goodness, you know, don't, you know, post on a blog because, you know, it's not, you know, peer-reviewed. Well, just wait a little while and it will be peer-reviewed, and then, you know, it's, and, you know, I think it's a great way, and, you know, it could be, you know, it's not that, I don't think, you know, something you're going to present to, you know, a journal is the same type of content you're going to be posting on a blog, because no one's going to, you know, read this massive amount of material in a blog, I don't think. Maybe. But blogs are generally, you know, quicker, just sort of, you know, read it on a page or two and, you know, post a comment. So it's a way to be more spontaneous and react to things that are, you know, more current than, you know, waiting to write it and review it and edit it and then have it published and then have it, you know, read there. So I think there's sort of different items, but I don't think that a blog is necessarily something that, you know, should be discouraged by any means.
I think there's a great entry point in terms of especially legal higher ed, as we talk about more complex that have multiple layers, to use something like Frapper or Wayfair to explain concepts, especially when you're trying to coordinate visual concepts, I think, of legal research. So instead of your map of Fort Lauderdale, it's your library map, and then you have your tags, and then you can build in. And within that little bubble that pops up, you could drop out to the Cali lesson on CFR, or you could go to the librarian's blog that explains that lesson, or Wikipedia, and those sorts of things. And I don't know where we get sort of that map from. You know, conceptually, yeah, we could do it with a map of Fort Lauderdale, because we can get all these maps of Fort Lauderdale. But I'm not a programmer, so I'm wondering, if anybody's looked at a way of sort of taking their local content and putting it into this format that students are very comfortable with, instead of our sort of linear attempts to be multi-layered in a more linear fashion. Does that make sense? Is that
yeah. And I know there is at least one site I've seen where they've tried that. And I forget exactly what they did, but it used Flickr. And so they took just different pictures of kind of where they were, I think. You remember?
Carry
this
on.
Is just me. Yeah. And it essentially, he kind of did it live, like they were at a conference somewhere, and so he just went around with his the digital camera on his cell phone and just kind of recorded different instances of where he was. And then it kind of created a map almost live of, you know, where the different rooms were, and he put it into Flickr and did some tagging with it. And if I track that link down, I'll put it on the blog.
Wayfaring does something like that, where you can integrate Flickr tags and other tags with this Google Map, with you can actually direct. So you know, here's the sequence that you need to follow. Mm-hmm. We actually thought that it would be fun to do a presentation on getting to Cali using that.
Yeah.
But if we could take CFR or Digest, give them that layered approach with all those supplemental things on one sheet, at least for some students who learn that, would be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly possible. All you really need is the location information, and then you know you just tie it all together. And using the API, you just would put it out there. But you're right, it takes a lot of work. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I work here, and you know the panel is out in a lower lobby that everybody's been requesting for the conference location. We're trying to find RSS feed for that without it going to. An internet site, you know, to jump into internet sites and then spam them and go out to different places. So when we have to write our own RSS feed in order to get just a line, like a headline, or is anyone aware of a program that would just be headlines, an RSS feed that's just headlines? See, there's usually our RSS feed will, you touch it and you go to the New York Times. We don't want anyone to go to the New York Times. We just want or a text.
Okay. So does it link to anywhere? It doesn't link anywhere?
You don't want it to link just, anywhere. Right.
Right. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can consume. I don't know what you're running to display that, but yeah, you could write it, and just when you generate the HTML based on the RSS feed itself, you would just not provide a link. And typically there's a little description. They'll give you a flavor, at least, for the article.
Right.
Just to make people aware, but they wouldn't be able to follow through and then discover it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So how would you not link it to it?
Well, we have feeds that display on our site. And in the background, it's PHP. It's doing an XML query to get the RSS feed back in.
Okay.
And then it's just a simple text file. It's got certain things that you need to have, optional extras, and you just ignore the fact that there was a link in your presentation, part of the scheme.
You're manipulating the XML yourself.
Right, yeah. Which you would need to do to make it appear. At some point in your pipeline, that's got to happen, whether it's a third party or yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to explain that to our developer who created that.
Right.
Doesn't CNN or some news service like that offer an exclusive RSS feed? I mean, just exclusive to CNN?
Okay.
Yeah, or even AP, Associated Press, United Press International, UBI. I'm sure one of those three do offer.
Because I was telling you about people and those other kinds of things like jurists that you can bring in, but then you click on it and go to jurists or go to.
Yeah. There are actually, is it a web browser that it
yes.
runs? Yeah. So there are little JavaScript RSS readers which you can just use in a page.
Oh.
and you can modify the JavaScript just to not alter the document to have the link in it. That'd be another way. And then you wouldn't need a server
right.
to handle it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that us? Thank you very much.
Thank you.